BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Hello and welcome everyone to another BDNG in conversation with. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the lead education and development nurse for the BDNG. So today the BDNG is in conversation with Dr. Archana Rao and she's here to speak about menopause and skin, which is a very hot topic at the moment as well. So welcome Dr. Rao, and before we talk more about menopause, could you quickly introduce yourself and how you became interested in this topic?
Good morning, Tina, and thank you so much for inviting me to the podcast and on this issue, which I think is really important, more so in today's time than ever before. So I'm a consultant dermatologist, and my NHS base is at Kingston Hospital. I work locally here. And over the last decade, as I've been a consultant, I've seen more and more women in this age group, 40s, 50s, 60s, coming with skin and hair issues. And they are floundering. They have no idea what's going on with their skin. Lots of times, the most standard statement I get is, I've always had perfect hair. I've always had perfect skin, and I don't know why this is happening to me. So I work closely with menopause specialists, and together we've realized that, you know, these changes are very often reflected on the hair and skin, and this therefore became an area of interest for me because A, it is a neglected area. Most women don't know what to do, and I said someone just needs to educate and help them through it. So that's how it came into being, Tina, my interest in perimenopause and menopause skin and hair. And what I like to do is educate them up and above everything else. And of course, try to use all the expertise, knowledge, experience that I have gathered over the last two decades in helping to treat them.
It's just fantastic work because I think it's such a topic that's quite out there at the moment on social media, and we've had sort of celebrities taking it on board as well, you know, so it's a topic now I think women are more focused on. Before it was hidden away a bit, but more and more women I feel are talking about menopause, which is really positive. And as working as a clinician as well, I do find that a lot more patients are coming in and asking about menopause. As a nurse, I feel I'm not an expert in menopause. And what are the sort of topics you would discuss with your patients if they came in and asked, you know, my skin's changed or my hair has changed because of menopause?
So the first thing that I explain to them is the changes that happen. So from 40s onwards, from the time we turn 40, the hormones in our body start changing. So one third of the women spend our lives in this perimenopause and menopause phase. And this is the time where our hormones are against us. So it's like swimming against the tide, if I can explain that. So estrogen starts dipping, and that's responsible for things like the shine of your hair, the quality of your skin. In addition to that, over a period of time, the skin barrier. So if you can imagine this, if you pull our skin apart, just imagine a transparent membrane, and that's the barrier which protects us from the outside world. That starts becoming weaker. We lose more water, transepidermal water loss. So it's a technical term. What it means is our skin dehydrates a bit more. Collagen starts shrinking. The elastic fibers, which give the elasticity and the sheen to our skin, they start diminishing in quality, in texture. So all of this results in changes on the skin, which women find quite perplexing. So it can happen. The oil glands start drying up, and therefore they are more prone to getting inflamed. So therefore, more and more women come with adult acne. Then the skin becomes more sensitive because of the changes I've mentioned to you. And there it's rosacea. So what they said was just a healthy flush and a blush of the skin. The skin now stops doing that and starts getting more and more angry because it becomes more inflamed. So while they said, I just had a face which just became a bit flushed, now I'm getting spotty like a teenager. And up and above everything, because of the hormonal changes, lots of women start experiencing pigmentation because the barriers weaken, the sun exposure over the years accumulates. If you're on hormonal treatment or have been or aren't, that has an impact on the skin. So pigmentation becomes, and she's like, I had clear skin. I don't understand why I'm getting these blotchy pigmentation. It looks horrible. I've had women who, when they were told sunshine is bad for pigmentation, her house was literally, she said, my husband is losing the plot. Everything, my windows are closed. I'm in, whenever I'm resting, I'm in a very dark room. So people go to that length and extreme to preserve what they felt was their youth. So these are changes, and I wouldn't call them natural. They are progressive changes that happen to the skin. So the main thing is understanding it. So for things like pigmentation, people come and the first thing they want to know is the best cream, doctor, the best cream. I want the best cream that you can. And I said, the best cream you can do is sun protection. So if you use good sun protection, you're A, cutting out the sunlight, because all your skin, so pigmentation results in two things. One is the melanocytes, which are the cells in the skin which need to produce the pigment. And the second is the sunshine. If no sun falls on it, you won't get the pigmentation. So I emphasize how they should be wearing sunscreen regularly, like 20 minutes before going out in the sunshine. If you're on a hot holiday, reapplying it within 3 to 4 hours. Doing that is vital. And after that, I say the time to use the skin lightening or the prescription creams is mainly in autumn and winter, when you're going to have less sunshine, because some of them contain bleaching agents. So if you use it and then you go out and even a little bit of sun falls on it, which is natural in a hot climate, if you've gone to Spain or Turkey or Paris for a summer holiday where the sun is really strong, then that will result in that best cream causing pigmentation for you. So it's a very, you just need to treat your skin, but you need to treat it slightly differently when you're in your 40s, 50s and 60s.
That's fantastic advice. And I think, you know, as a nurses, we're in a really good position, isn't it, to talk about sun protection and sun awareness. And we're covering a lot of bases there as well with, you know, other aspects of dermatology as well. You mentioned acne there as well, which, you know, as an adult, it's something that a lot of women may have never experienced before or way back in their teenage years. So how best as a nurse are we what would we advise about acne? If a patient came in with related acne to menopause?
So this is a really interesting trend, Tina, because when I started dermatology as a student, the textbook said acne is a teenage problem, is a problem that happens to the oil glands during teenage skin. And over the years, I have realized, actually, hang on, I'm seeing more women with adult acne than I'm seeing teenagers. So what happens is that these oil glands, they become inflamed as a result of the hormonal changes that happen. So first things first, as a nurse, you say, that's fine. It's not abnormal. Of course, it's not ideal, but this can happen. Now, simply saying that to a patient makes them relax a little bit, because lots of times I'll have women picking up the phone and saying, Archana, you're treating my teenage sons and they've got perfect skin and I'm looking like a spotty teenager. So I explained to them, firstly, as a nurse, yes, that happens. It can happen. It just needs treatment. And the treatment specifically changed slightly. So I would treat acne differently in a perimenopausal and menopausal age group than I would treat in teenagers. So most of the women who present with acne are usually in their 40s when the hormonal changes are still kicking in. They've already tried everything that they've, you know, mostly they would say, I've had it as a teenager, went away, never came back. What's this now? Or like you're very rightly saying, Tina, they would come for it for the first time and say, I've had perfect skin, so I'm not sure what's going on over here. Antibiotics, low-grade antibiotics can be used. And as nurses, you know, that's something well within nurses who prescribe that can prescribe to them things like limecyclin, doxycycline. The pill, which was an option when you're a teenager, is not so much of an option now. But again, it's about correcting hormonal balances. So what comes in here is an option called spironolactone, which is not as widely used in this country as it is used overseas. Spironolactone is actually a diuretic, so it makes you wee. So the first thing I tell my patient is, if you've forgotten to take it, don't take it at night. You're going to hate me. You'll be up all night. It's to be taken in the morning, and the reason it works is it has an anti-androgen effect. So all of us have male and female hormones in our body, as we are aware. But at times of menopause, because the female hormone starts dipping, the male hormone becomes more active. And spironolactone has an anti-androgen effect. In my experience, it's a bit of a hit and miss drug. It'll work really well for some patients. I've had some patients who actually refuse to get off it. Having said that, because it's a high blood pressure, a medication that was used for hypertension, it's relatively safe with low risk and side effects. And we assess this in clinic. But at the same time, it's got less side effects than the other traditional medications such as isotretinoin, which is still an option, but yeah. I go through what is actually, what is happening with their body, what is happening with their skin, and tailor and target their treatments accordingly, which is exactly what a nurse can do. It's not a mechanical recipe at this point of time, because you have to be mindful about the changes that are happening to them and make it work synergistically together. Lots of times, some treatments may not work with the HRT that they are taking. So it's really mindful to be aware of that. So as a nurse, you can give the basic knowledge. A lot of nurses can train further in it, and I always encourage that. And if nothing else, you know that they need to go for a specialist referral to have someone look at it and tease it out accurately for them.
That's fantastic. And really good information there about spironolactone as well. And, you know, the details there and the little tips just about, you know, being more prone to going to the toilet in the, at night. It's all these little tips that are really useful for patients. And, you know, the difference there between prescribing maybe isotretinoin to spironolactone is really useful for our listeners today. So thank you for that. So going back to menopause-related treatments, I'm becoming more aware, and I'm sure the audience is as well, about the amount of products or sell that is on social media in regards to menopause and these wonderful treatments or wonderful tips. Do you find, as a dermatology consultant, that a lot of patients are approaching you with comments like, you know, I've tried this on, I've heard this on social media. How do you sort of guide them to places which are secure and they will get, you know, evidence-based information? What, as nurses, can we promote to our patients and that is safe for them to look at?
So, Tina, I get this a lot. A lot, a lot.
Yes.
It's people coming in with bags of products. This is what I've used. And now you're absolutely right. It's being commercialized, sadly, with perimenopausal, menopausal shampoos, anything and everything you can think of. So I say this to my patients that whenever you look at social media, and you have people who either love it or hate it. People will either have nothing to do with it or spend hours on it. And I say use it for its good, for its value, for its utility, because there is so much good information out there. But at the same time, anybody and everybody picks up a product and says, use this. So for me, especially because of my interest and obviously because of the things I look at, the amount of ads that come in with hair serums and whatnot, it's a minefield out there. You're very right. What I would say with social media is choose your information. Choose the information that you listen to and check the qualifications, because anybody and everybody can pick up something and say, use it. So don't believe everything that you hear. Anything that is advertised, you have to take it with a pinch of salt. And I would always say this, check the qualifications of the person who is talking about it. If it's a GP with a specialist interest in HRT, they are likely giving you the correct information on HRT. If it is somebody who says, you know what, my interest is HRT and I've been researching it for the 10 years, it's not going to compare to a medical or a nursing degree, is it? Mm-hmm. So choose your information wisely is what I would say, and don't believe everything as the gospel truth. When people come to me and say, I want a shampoo, it will stop my hair loss. That's the first thing I say, Tina. No shampoo is going to stop your hair loss. It affects the pH of your hair. It's a very important part of your treatment to keep your scalp healthy. But it's not going to stop. It'll correct the pH and encourage a healthy scalp, and a healthy scalp will promote hair growth. But a shampoo for a hair loss is not going to happen. You need to look deeper than that. And I get simple things like, oh, I saw it on the social media that the amount of times I wash my hair, if I'm losing my hair, I should just not do it. And I've had women who have not washed their hair for weeks come back, come to me to the clinic without having washed their hair for 2 weeks. And it's simple things like that, Tina. It's science, and a person with a scientific background will be able to explain that your hair is going to fall every day. Now, the amount of hair varies, and some women, of course, we go through phases where our hair falls a little bit more than other times. If you don't wash your hair for 5 days and wash it on the sixth day, the amount of hair you would have washed would have fallen, would all fall out in that one wash. So it's a little bit more alarming, actually. So I always emphasize, keep your scalp healthy. There is no correct option because everybody's skin and therefore scalp is different. So for some women, twice a week work. For some women, 4 times a week works. There's no right or wrong for it, but don't not wash your hair in the fear of losing hair, because that hair will fall off in the next wash any which ways. So if you've not washed your hair for 2 weeks and you've come to my clinic and you're going to go and wash your hair now, you're in for a pretty rude shock.
That's a really good tip, actually, about the hair loss, and something I'd never actually thought about, because I think, you know, back in the day, we were very much told wash your hair every day. But I think more and more women are moving away from that and, you know, washing their hair less frequently. So, again, that's a really good tip, because people do come in and say, oh, the amount of hair that's on my hairbrush, and, you know, I'm losing more and more hair, and, you know, down to my treatments or possibly my age. And they just don't know where to go, do they, for, you know, advice, really. You mentioned there about the pH levels of, you know, products. And I think if you go into a supermarket these days, you're overcome with products. There's so many products out there for patients. And is there any particular shampoo or products, hair products, you would advise for patients? Or is it what suits them, basically?
It's what suits them, basically, Tina. There is no one standard protocol. So, you know, when I do, when I started my interest in hair, because again, a lot of women in their 40s, 50s start losing hair at this point of time. One of the consultants told me, you sure you're going to do hair? You know, the woman will drive you crazy. And I was like, I'm going to do hair, because I think it's just a scientific, logical approach that people need. So there is no one product that is going to do it. There are, you know, and because when I joined it, he said, what are you going to do with your hair, Archana? There are literally 5 treatments you can do. And today, the first thing I do when I teach, I just had a lecture, as you know, Tina, with the GPs a couple of Saturdays ago. And I said, when I started, I showed them a slide of 5 things, okay? Shampoo, antifungal shampoo, topical minoxidil, topical steroids. So just 5 options that they had. And now my treatment page is 2 pages and more of treatments. So it is, no 2 people are the same. No 2 people's scalp and hair is the same. So everybody has what is unique to them, and I will tailor the treatment for them accordingly.
That's really good. That's fantastic and reassuring as well, because I think even a patient just getting told that, you know, just being told that there's no specific product out there that's the wonder product, you know, and what's best for you is the best way to go. As a nurse as well, a lot of questions I get asked about menopause is, should I take any supplements? Would you advise any supplements when a woman has menopause?
Do you know what? It's a very, very popular question. And it's about supplements which are best for the skin. It's supplements which are, the key one is that, what are the best supplements for the hair? And I've done a little spill on this on Instagram, because you should take what you need. Take what you need. Don't overload your body with what you don't need. Because it's interesting, you wouldn't take a drug, would you, without knowing what the side effects of it, without questioning what it does to you. So again, there is no evidence about what taking high dose vitamin C will do to your body if you take it for 5 years or so. So when they come in for a problem, whether it's skin, whether it's hair, we go through things, and one of the key issues that I go through with them is their diet and their lifestyle. Again, it wasn't there in the textbooks when I studied 20 years ago. It's something that I've learned with life, with experience from my patients. And then I'll order a panel of blood tests for them. If they are deficient and there are certain elements that do become more deficient as one goes through perimenopause or menopause and menopause, the logical one is iron. Because most women have had a reproductive cycle. We've had children. And even if we've not had children, we've had our regular periods. We've lost more blood during the course of our life. So if we compare ourselves, if a 45-year-old woman compares herself with a 45-year-old man, they're already at a deficit. So I test, Tina, for the, you know, for things which are, I think, are relevant to them. If they say a mom had a history of thyroid, that I'll definitely check their thyroid as well. And it's correcting the key elements that are wrong rather than stuffing your body with anything and everything that you, your friend promoted or your sister-in-law said was amazing. The drinking this collagen was amazing. No two people are the same. So what works for one is not necessarily going to work for another. And I think people should really understand that and seek the correct support that they need rather than just taking a random supplement over the counter.
Absolutely. And the cost as well, isn't it? I mean, they're so expensive, some of these products, and, you know,
very expensive,
very expensive. And, you know, the cost of living, everything, we want to minimize that. So you know, it is really important to get that message across to our patients. So I've heard you speak before at our BDNG conference last year, and which was fantastic, and we're hoping again to engage you this year at the BDNG conference. In that conference there's a lot of nurses that are really, really interested in menopause. They want more support and more education for menopause as well, and it's fantastic that we have consultants like you that are taking this interest. And I know I follow you on your social media sites on Instagram, and you get a lot of information there. You do a lot of other podcasts as well. Is there anywhere you would signpost nurses to have any extra education on menopause and what they can actually say to their patients?
So do you know what, Tina? That's a really good question, because like you say, it's an evolving field. There are, and the thing is, because it's such a huge and vast issue, menopause. So menopause will contain the core issues of how the body changes, things like HRT, how to combat that. But it'll also kind of branch out to things like skin and hair. That's different. A lot of people have rheumatological problems that come up, you know, joints, dry eyes. So it's a whole minefield of different things that happen to women during this point of time in life. What I would say to nurses who are interested in perimenopause and menopause, a good basic training in the perimenopause, menopause area. And you, I think the way to do this is make sure you learn, because I've seen lots of courses by people who are training in menopause or menopause. I would say go to a qualified doctor or a nurse who is who's working in perimenopause, menopause, is known to deal with these issues, and get training from them. And I think at the nursing school, I'm not sure if there is such an available or feasibility, but I think for practical day-to-day things, I always tell my patients, if you want to learn about, so the risk of skin cancers, as you know, increases so much during this time, in addition to everything else, in my biologics clinic, I will see more and more women with psoriasis, which become quite relentless once they become 40s and 50s. And then the treatment also changes for them. And what I have introduced recently at the hospital, me and one of my rheumatology colleagues and myself have set up a specialized dermatology rheumatology clinic. So we can see patients with both these problems together. What I would suggest to nurses is, if they have an area of interest, if they feel, actually, you know what, I'm more interested in joints and menopause. I'm actually interested in the hair loss and menopause. I'm actually very interested in the inflammatory conditions. So things like psoriasis and lichen planus. Get in touch with people who are teaching in teaching hospitals and sit in their clinics, because that's the most valuable experience you can gain. When you sit, you learn, you go back home, you read. There isn't a course, Tina, but I have taken it on board, because when I did the talk with GPs a couple of weeks ago, and I've been told this previously as well, so we are looking to having a training day for hair loss. And I think I should take that on board. You know, it would be a good thing for the nurses to do a perimenopause and menopause educational event for them, which would cover key issues like the general menopause, HRT, what to tell them about their joints, what to tell them about their skin, how to address skin cancers. So I take that on board, and I think I will, you know, look into having an educational event, but we are certainly planning one for hair. So I think, yeah, check qualifications, approach people. I have people sitting in my clinic regularly, sometimes more than one, because the best way to learn is to see and learn.
I think we have a plan form in here. I think we could do a concentrated BDNG menopause skin and hair day, couldn't we? I think we need to plan that for the future, definitely.
Most certainly. And I think it's really useful because it's key. I work so closely with my colleagues. And when I do my clinics, I have a lovely nurse working in the isotretinoin clinic. And more now, I'm employing her to give the medication for frontal fibrosing alopecia with hair loss. And she's keen and she wants to know and she wants to learn. Because again, I think as a medical professional, that is the challenge in life, that we get up, we learn something new, and no 2 days are the same. So with good effective clinical supervision and with support, I think it'll be great for nurses to be more involved, more aware. And everybody I've always worked with, I'm very fortunate. I've worked with a very good team of nurses always, whether I was training in Ealing Hospital or Chelsea Westminster or now as a consultant in Kingston. I'm very approachable. So if they feel this is something which is beyond their remits or beyond their, you know, they will always come. They'll always check with me. So I think, yes, if nurses do have an interest in developing their role in this, and certainly, like you say, it is the need of the hour, more than happy to help with the education side of things, Tina, with it.
That's fantastic. I think we've definitely got some plans in the future for us working together. And the great news is to our listeners as well, Dr. Rowe will be doing a journal article that we're going to be linking this podcast into as well, and hopefully we're going to have more podcasts on this subject as well. I know you've already offered a few different topics, which is fantastic, and I think, you know, I think lots of nurses would be really interested in a concentrated menopause day, definitely. So I think we need to plan that one. So thank you so much for today. That's absolutely fantastic information and lots to build on as well. Is there anything for our listeners, sort of three top tips you would give to our listeners on menopause, what we can say to our patients, or top tips for us as clinicians to be sort of saying to our patients?
So, you know, thank you, Tina. And I think it's really a big thank you for helping spread this message and this awareness, which I think is key. And it's great for a professional, a bunch of professionals like yourselves to be involved and aware of this condition. So I would say the first thing that I want to say to people, and again, when I was reading the stats on menopause and the amount of women who just go through it along with it at work, don't want to speak to their workers about it. And the amount of women who drop out of work, it's quite alarming. It has an impact not only on that person and their family, but has an impact on the country, of the economy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not something that is to be taken lightly. And if they come to us as professionals, whether they come to us with the psoriasis flaring up badly, we take that into hold and try to get them back on track. So first thing I would tell patients, I would tell nurses, if somebody is in your clinic and they are there, for example, for something else, they've come to the light treatment and they say, you know, actually, I'm just suffering through it and I really don't want to talk about it, encourage them to seek help and speak about it. They are not alone. Okay. It's really important to just not think about this as something that you have to just go through in life quietly with your head down. There are options, there are treatment options, and it can get you back on track again. The amount of women who say they lose their confidence, it defeats their purpose of getting up in the morning and going to bed, it's such a huge responsibility when I think about it. You won't believe it, Tina. I had a lady who had alopecia. So she was developing patches of hair loss. She said, I never had it as a teenager. And all of a sudden, perimenopause, menopause, life, stress, hormones, and she was losing her hair in chunks. And whenever she sat down with me, she always spoke to me about how stressed she was. And then when one day she came back and she said, I took your advice, Dr. Rao. I said, what was that? She said, when I left your clinic the last time, I said, you just looked up at me and you said the stress, there is something you need to work on, you need to address that because that's the core issue. She sold her house in London, moved out, and changed her job. And my husband, with all due respect, he's an ICU cardiac anesthetist, so he's saving lives. So he cannot understand how my job is more important. Not more important, period. I said, Vivek, today a lady changed her house and her life based on what I told her. Wow. So I think we underestimate our role in helping people. So A, ask them to seek help. B, ask them to educate themselves wisely, to be aware of, you know, things where they see on Instagram. Tease out your information correctly. And lastly, I think it's really important that we all go out and be our best productive selves in society. So anything that you and I can do to help women do that, we should.
Absolutely. You really hit the nail on the head there. Absolutely fantastic. And I think not only our patients, I think our workforce as well. I think that's another avenue we can go down, because I think, you know, as professionals, we have to look after each other. You know, it's all about actually talking about menopause. And I think hospitals and primary care are definitely getting better at that. You know, we're sort of speaking as professionals more about it. And there also is help out there for ourselves as well, which is fantastic. So I would like to say a massive thank you once again. I really could speak to you all day. As it's for our listeners, as I say, we are going to be doing more work around this particular topics. We hopefully have more journal articles, and watch this space as well for a dedicated day on these topics, which would, I think, is a really good idea. So thank you once again, and thank you listeners for tuning into this podcast today.
Been a pleasure, Tina. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rai. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.